Welcome to Securing America with me, Frank Affney, the program that's a kind of owner's manual for the country we love as we wage war for its future against all enemies, foreign and domestic, to the glory of God and his kingdom. We're going to talk about several fronts in that war both foreign and domestic, and who better to do that with than one of our most valued resources on this program, a great friend and much, much admired colleague at the Committee on the Present Danger, China, among other things. His name is Charles Sam Faddis. As you know, if you've been watching this program or any number of others, Sam brings to these topics an extraordinary background as an Army officer, but also as an undercover operative for the Central Intelligence Agency for some 20 years. He has written a very important book. We'll be citing it here momentarily, entitled Beyond Repair, The Decline and Fall of the CIA. He's also the driving force behind a wonderful online resource and magazine, which you can find at substack.com. Sam, welcome back, my friend. Good to have you, sir.
Thank you for having me, as always, Frank.
A privilege. Let me start by asking you about your old agency. The Daily Mail features prominently, as we're speaking, a report about disinformation that Donald Trump ordered the Central Intelligence Agency to disseminate back in 2019, saying scurrilous things about the Chinese Communist Party leadership and, among other things, evidence to be found in their foreign bank accounts of their plundering the Chinese people and their economy to their personal profit. Say it ain't so, Sam, that that kind of disinformation was ordered by Donald Trump.
You know, we all read 1984, Frank, and we get it that the way language gets twisted, we understood the intellectual concept, and now we live it all day, every day. Disinformation... It is hard to say with a straight face, right? This thuggish, criminal, totalitarian gang that runs communist China. And if you publicize the fact that they are thuggish and criminal and horribly corrupt, that's now disinformation. And God knows who was outraged by this and decided to go screaming to the press that the CIA had the audacity to tell the truth, but that's what happened.
Well, as I understand it, in the reporting from the Daily Mail, it was CIA personnel, multiple sources,
probably
were revealing this. So, again, you've written the book on the condition of your alma mater, if I could call it that. Tell us what this episode suggests, not only about Donald Trump trying to do something very important here in terms of reaching over the heads of the Chinese Communist Party to the people of China, who, it turns out, we share in common a mutual enemy in the CCP. But also what it says about the leakers in the agency that they're so in such high dudgeon about this and obviously hoping to harm Donald Trump in this presidential race.
Yeah, well, I mean, of course, it is one of the express missions of the Central Intelligence Agency to do things like this and done throughout the Cold War to tell the truth to people about what is happening here. It says something as bad as you're suggesting. I mean, you have people inside the Central Intelligence Agency now, and unfortunately in positions of power, many of them, who are hostile to American interests, and they're outraged by this, that we would say bad things about the Chinese Communist Party. I've had occasion to talk to some folks who are still inside relatively recently about the conditions inside, and it's occupied territory inside the Central Intelligence Agency. You have the equivalent of commissars now, and on your formal performance evaluations, whether you're going to get promoted the next grade, almost at the very top of the list is your dedication to diversity, equity, and inclusion. and your actual performance of your job, what you would call tradecraft, I think is now down like number seven in terms of things they care about. So, and increasingly, by the way, they talk about not diversity, equity, inclusion, just in terms of dedication at work, but you have to show it in this sort of whole life outside of the office way, which, I mean, for you and I, knowing what we know about Marxist ideology, the echoes here of having to demonstrate conclusively you're the new man and you're part of the vanguard. I mean, it's right there and it's reality all day, every day.
This is chilling, Sam. I mean, again, because as you've made very clear on this program in the past, you want people who perform their missions successfully to be the people who are prized and elevated, yes, and defending their country.
Yes.
And Sam, I just have to say that as a matter of tradecraft, if you're out exhibiting in your daily life as an undercover operative that you're all about transgenderism and diversity, equity, inclusion, that would seem to me to be a pretty good formula for blowing your cover, don't you think?
Yeah, and it's just such a denial of reality, right? I mean, you know, if you're running around on the ground in Khartoum trying to stay alive and keep your assets alive, your dedication to diversity, equity, and inclusion is not really relevant and probably counterproductive. And that's the thing, is it literally, this is a tough business. I mean, the information is critical. But also, you got to keep yourself alive, and you certainly got to keep your asset alive. Even if you're in a place where all they're going to do is arrest you and send you home, they're going to kill your guy if they catch him. And so you can't afford to play. Well, no, you can't afford to play these games. And we are. And it's jeopardizing American national security without question.
It is. But just to double back to this question about Donald Trump, in our committee on the present danger, China, of which you are a very important member, mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that we're very set on is destroying the Chinese Communist Party.
Absolutely.
And I would guess that what Donald Trump was trying to do was just that.
Absolutely.
And assuming this is all true, and
yes,
who knows, but it's certainly what you hoped he would be doing. You'd hope that's what we'd be doing in this administration, but not so much. And among other places, you have contributed mightily to the Accountability Initiative, which has dissected the pedigrees of many of these people in senior positions in this administration. And it's clear they are rooting for the team Donald Trump was trying to take down. And if you want to deal in as painless a way as possible with the mortal threat that we are now facing from the Chinese Communist Party, I don't think there's a more clear thing to be doing than to help encourage the people of China to rise up against them. There are, what, 1.3 billion of them or so? It's a declining number, but whatever it is, there's a lot more of them than the 90 million Chinese Communist Party members.
Yep.
They could do this, and we should be helping them do it, no?
We should be, look, we ought to be telling, pounding away at this kind of message in regard to communist China. In regard to the mullahs and the ayatollahs in Iran, right? Telling the truth to the people. We, all throughout the Cold War, what were we doing? We were constantly, in every way we could, trying to get messages to all the subject people of the Soviet Union. This is what's really happening in the world. Truth is on our side. It's about the most American thing you could think of, and yet apparently there are people inside the building who think this is a threat now.
Well, if you're rooting for the other team, I think you probably would come to that conclusion. Sam Faddis, we have to take a short break. We're going to come back and we're going to discuss TikTok, an instrument the Chinese Communist Party is using to undermine us. Stay tuned, folks. We'll be right back. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. This week, the House and Senate are supposed to fund the last few government agencies still awaiting appropriations for a fiscal year that is now half over. If recent practice is any guide, at the Senate's insistence, the House will concede key priorities. Take funding for foreign operations. The Senate reportedly is insisting on rescinding a House measure to defund the World Health Organization. Underwriting the WHO will support Team Biden's impending stealthy efforts to surrender American sovereignty to that organization's unaccountable and malfeasant Marxist director general. As we saw in the COVID pandemic, when the WHO could only give us advice, your medical freedom can be snuffed by Dr. Tedros Ghebreyesus. That will surely happen if he is granted the authority to dictate our public health policy. Join us in telling the House to hold the line on defunding the WHO at sovereigntycoalition.org. This is Frank Affney.
We're back. Sam Faddis is in the house. I'm always delighted to be able to say that. And we encourage you to be checking him out when he's not here at AND Magazine at Substack.com. Sam, we were talking about political warfare, information warfare, and the like. Let's turn to how the Chinese Communist Party is waging it against us. In the course of this week, TikTok has been much in the news, and I think has been helpfully addressed by the House of Representatives. Right. There are people who quibble about the nature of the bill that they were adopting and so on. But talk through with us a little bit. As a trained operative in this space, what kind of capability is now present in the hands of our mortal enemy, the Chinese Communist Party? And let me just say, you gave a fabulous contribution to a webinar our Committee on the Present Danger China did this week on this very subject. And I urge people, please go check out all of these webinars, but particularly this one about TikTok at presentdangerchina.org. Give us the short form of your intervention there.
Well, I think the first thing people need to understand as a baseline here, right, is we talk all the time, you hear people talk about we could go to war with the Communist Chinese. Okay, forget about that. The war started. The war started a long time ago, and they're already at war with us in a whole variety of ways. And I'm not using that as some kind of vague metaphor or illusion, that for real. And that a huge part of that are influence operations directed at us in a whole variety of ways, whether they're buying politicians or whether they're just messing with your heads using things like TikTok. TikTok is part of that. So, in terms of messaging, in terms of direction, in terms of what they feed us, but also just really in some really direct mechanical ways. Like one of the things that has come out, I know there were some classified, you know, behind closed doors briefings on TikTok and stuff that we can't talk about in this format. But one of the things that has come out publicly is you put that stuff on your phone, your device, your computer, that stuff, meaning that software, that app. Okay, it does all kinds of things to your device and your phone and your computer that you have zero visibility into. One of the things it does is it downloads a keystroke logger. So every key you press, everything you type, it logs. Not just like it keeps track of that was 170 keystrokes. No, it keeps track of, it sees and apparently relays, it's the only reason to do it, what you type. Okay. That's spyware, guys. We used to do that or still do that to our enemies, infiltrate something onto your device, and then every time you send a message to anybody, and not just on TikTok, from that point on, everything you do on your device is visible to the Chinese Communist Party, right? So
big data.
There's no conceivable commercial reason, using the term generically, for that to be part of TikTok. So that is deliberate spyware embedded for a purpose. So you're crazy if you put this stuff on your device. That's all I can tell you.
Look, Sam, I think the more we're learning about TikTok, the more chilling is the kind of capabilities that are resident in it. And again, I think this webinar, if you couldn't get the classified briefing, which, by the way, the I believe it was the Energy and Commerce Committee in the House got it, and all 50 members, every single one of them, left-wing Democrats to conservative Republicans, every one of them voted for this legislation that was overwhelmingly on a bipartisan basis approved by the House of Representatives. That tells you that what is in the classified domain on TikTok is even more chilling. But it's bad enough just what we were able to talk about in the open space yesterday, Sam. And I just wanted to draw our attention to this one piece. You are, to your great credit, my friend, spending much of your waking hours these days trying to ensure that in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, where you reside, there's a remote chance of a free and fair election. And that's despite all of the efforts that Democrats, yes, and Republicans are making to keep it from happening. But I just want to say, if you were successful in every venture that you're engaged in that regard, whether it's IDs or whether it's, you know, cashiering the mail-in ballots, whether it's, you know, cleaning up the voter rolls, whether it's, you know, same-day voting, any of it, all of it, let's just say. If what I've learned is that 173 million Americans are subject to mind control by TikTok, unwittingly, they're addicted to this platform by design, and they know not what they're doing, but somebody else may know what they're doing or be telling them what to do. Is that the end of free and fair elections, Sam?
Well, that's exactly what you get, just as you pointed out. Okay, the ballot is real. The guy really voted this way. This is what he wanted. But he decided to vote that way based on propaganda, deliberate disinformation, manipulation. The Chinese Communist Party reached into his head and so warped his perception of reality that he has been convinced to vote this way. So you're absolutely right. So every check we're focused on in Pennsylvania is irrelevant because Joe really did say that. Now, he did that because the Chinese communists have so messed with his perception of reality that he thinks that's true. This is going on, as you and I both know, all day, every day.
But the thing that I guess I'm just concerned about is, Sam, I've told this story on a previous program, I believe. I was listening to somebody in the midst of this vote in the House talking about how he worked up there. Their office was getting calls from children, American kids, in tears, because they were being told that if they didn't call their congressman and urge them to vote against this legislation, they were going to lose their access to TikTok. This, in other words, this is an example, and I think probably those guys pouring into the streets, the Queers for Palestine and so on, to try to save Hamas, again, reflects orders coming from the People's Liberation Army or the CCP or whomever, not simply subliminal messaging or content that will induce them to think a certain way, but being directed. Is that right? And if so, again, are we doomed as a nation if we can't roll this operation up?
Well, we are doomed as a nation if we don't roll this up and we don't push back. And we obviously, as you well know, have gone way too far down the road. One of the other things I've seen over the last few days in Pennsylvania in the Patriot movement, if you will, the America First movement, is people fighting to keep TikTok because somebody's telling them that this is government censorship and they're taking away their free speech.
It's a lot of that going around.
Very, very clever, because it's riding the wave of some real things that are happening. And of course, I spend all the time I can saying, okay, guys, here's the reality of what TikTok is. This is not free speech. This is communist thought manipulation. But again, the guys on the other side are really clever, and that's a smart way to spin this.
And they're picking up some support. Sam, we're not going to have time to do justice to this. We'll have you back for that purpose next week, I hope. But do just tell us a little bit about the state of the war, as you've revealed it in your AND magazine outlet, with respect to the Houthi rebels.
we're losing. And if we're not careful, we're going to watch a U.S. Navy destroyer go to the bottom sometime in the near future. And we're, you know, these guys are doubling down. And Joe apparently wants to make sure they still have ammunition. So he just gave the Iranians 10 billion more. So the Ayatollahs
just recently.
They just released another $10 billion to the Ayatollahs. So to make sure they can send more missiles to the guys that are trying to kill our people in the Red Sea.
This, let me just say, ladies and gentlemen, is treason.
It is.
Nothing short of treason. I know you agree, Sam. We can't stop this soon enough. Please, God, we'll survive to do just that. Sam Faddis, God bless you, my friend. Thank you for joining us. You are a national treasure. Keep up the great work at N Magazine and come back to us next week. Stay tuned, folks. We'll be right back with more.
Night after night in cities across the country, black garbed assailants clash with police in the streets, smash windows, and throw Molotov cocktails in an effort to destroy police stations, federal courthouses, and local businesses, all in the name of anti-fascism. Most Americans are now, sadly, all too aware of the movement known as Antifa. But where did they come from? What do they want? And how do we stop their campaign of violent mayhem? The Center for Security Policy Press is proud to present Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat. This new book looks at the history, ideology, organization, finances, and strategy of Antifa and provides an in-depth analysis for law enforcement officers, policymakers, and the general public. From street fighting tactics of the Black Bloc to fundraising by prominent left-wing foundations, Unmasking Antifa is the go-to guide to understand this elusive and dangerous threat. Get your copy of Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat at Amazon.com.
We're back, and I'm very pleased to say we have Dr. David Wormser with us the second time in the course of a week, fortuitously, because we need his expertise. And unfortunately, it's because some bad things are happening in his portfolio, which is, of course, the Middle East, which he covers brilliantly for us at the Center for Security Policy. He brings to the job a wealth of experience at the highest levels of the United States government, having worked for an Undersecretary of State, a National Security Advisor, and a Vice President, advising them on Middle East policy and, well, not least, developments that need our attention. And at the moment, David, there are several of them, and I'm glad to have you back. Thank you for joining us once again this week.
It's always wonderful, Frank. It's always great.
Thank you. So let me start by asking for your opinion of the speech that the majority leader of the United States Senate, Chuck Schumer, made on the floor of the Senate earlier this week, in which he was talking about Benjamin Netanyahu as the problem with respect to this unpleasantness between Israel and Hamas. And he simply opined that the Israeli people need to have an election and to get rid of him, and then all will be presumably well. What do you make of this, David?
Well, first of all, I think we have to understand that such speeches don't happen in a vacuum or spontaneously or from his volition. I think we have to understand that he was ordered or asked to do this by the White House. It fits perfectly with the crescendo, sort of a crescendo of a campaign the White House has launched, starting with Tom Friedman and other journalists out there saying that Bibi Netanyahu is an obstacle to peace and needs to be removed. Then you had a few attempts to reach out to the Israeli opposition to incite them to split the government, bring it down. Then you had the intelligence report put out, and those of us who have dealt with intelligence in the last 30 years know how politicized these intelligence reports have become, basically saying that the Israeli people are, that Benjamin Netanyahu, the prime minister, is in political freefall, It's collapsing. The government won't survive. If there are elections tomorrow, he'll be swept out, and so forth. And then you had, I mentioned Kamala Harris, and the that there's a difference between the Israeli government and the Israeli people. And so this was the final chapter. And the final chapter was go for the jugular, put him, try to incite Israel into dumping their prime minister, street demonstrations, which is one of the things that the intelligence report said would happen. So the intelligence report's really the battle plan. And Chuck Schumer was put up to it, not as the Senate majority leader. Nobody really cares in terms of foreign policy what the Senate majority leader says. He was put as the point person on this because he's the most prominent Jewish politician on the Democratic side right now. So that gives cover for an anti-Israeli, frankly, an anti-Jewish policy.
Right. And, you know, in this respect, I just have to remind our audience, we spoke yesterday with Rabbi Pesach Walecki, David, American rabbi who made Aliyah to Israel some 30 years ago. So he's very familiar with, as they say, both sides of the pond. He described the role that Chuck Schumer is playing as that of a, quote, court Jew, unquote. And that term may not be as familiar to others as it should be, in light of the importance of this particular role at this particular moment. Can you illuminate that?
Yeah, I think it's very important to understand this from the division between the way Israelis look at it and American supporters of Israel look at it and how this administration looks at it. Chuck Schumer has put himself forward as the Jew who worries about his people. He keeps saying his name Schumer comes from Shomer, which is the Hebrew word for protector. And it's true, there were these protectors in the Jewish community, not necessarily militarily, but there. But what's so offensive to the Israelis about this is the true protectors of the state of Israel right now is the IDF. And the prayer that everybody says, who's religious three times a day, as well as you hear on half the channels in Israel said at the beginning of programs and so forth, is the prayer for the IDF, for the soldiers of Israel. And it starts with Shomer Yisrael. And so it actually, for Israelis, the word Shomer means those who are literally in Gaza dying to defend the state, not a guy who attacks the Israeli prime minister. So there's a tradition of Jews
in the safety of
Senate. Washington serving. And this is why Rabbi Pesach Walecki said this, is serving the interests of the court in Washington rather than his people. Now, he's the senator. He should serve Washington's interests. But this administration has a particular set of interests that are in violation of the American-Israeli alliance, and what is really the violation of any appropriate behavior by a democracy to a fellow democracy.
Well, the 2 points there. Hold the thought. One is, he's not supposed to be advancing Washington's interests. He's supposed to be advancing the interests of his own constituents, obviously, but the American people more generally. The American people more generally. And the American people are not with, notwithstanding the Sharia supremacists in Michigan and their friends, they're not with Hamas.
Right.
And what this senator is doing is trying to save Hamas. That is what Biden is trying to do as well.
Exactly.
And to your second point, I think what we clearly are witnessing now is this whole vilification of Bibi is just contrary to the underlying reality inside Israel, is it not? They're suggesting that that Bibi is somehow at odds. We talked about this earlier in the week. Just reprise that if you would, David.
There was a poll yesterday that said that even if the United States breaks with Israel, should Israel go into Rafah? And 60-some percent said do it. That's in the context of breaking with the United States, not just would you do it. It's would you do it even if it led to a rupture in relations.
David, just on the subtabs on that, was that Israeli Arabs as well as these
people? Yes, sometimes it's the country as a whole. So if you, take the Israeli Jews, it's 80%.
So, David, again, what I'm anxious to make sure our audience understands about all this is that the people who represent us in Washington, D.C., not all of us, obviously, but enough of us, the Uni Party, as they're called, including Joe Biden and his executive branch team, are pursuing a course that will not only save Hamas if they have their way, but will lead inexorably to the destruction of the Jewish state, would it not?
Yeah. Israel has learned on October 7th something very terrifying, which was if there had been a Palestinian state on October 7th, Israel would not have survived October 7th. That is a consensus in Israel, and it's a consensus even on those who are the strongest supporters of a Palestinian state. That's why when you hear President Biden say Israel has other ways to work out its trauma, this is not a trauma. This is a sobriety. The Israelis woke up to a reality that they cannot escape now. And that reality is they are living next to a population that wants their soul. They want to take their lives. And
by the way, that's on both sides.
On all three sides, Lebanon, West Bank, and Gaza. And what's most important about that is this is not a war that is taking revenge for what happened. This is not a war that is to exercise the trauma of October 7th. This is a war literally to stop October 7th from happening again and happening in a more deadly, perhaps finally fatal way. And that's why Netanyahu, if anything, has most of his country to his right and unhappy with him because they're more hardline than he is. So
and he's been accommodating the United States.
Yes.
And as you know, I just want to take a final minute with you on an accommodation that I think we both agree is exceedingly ill-advised, which is tolerating the United States placing a port in Gaza, nominally a temporary port, but a port that we will build and our personnel will have to be present at for some time at least. Just quickly, David, we've got a very important paper that you're drafting on this subject at the Center for Security Policy. Give us a shorthand overview of what it's going to say.
Well, the port is a terrible idea, and the reason for it is a number of reasons. It's an attempt to directly involve the United States in between the Israelis and the Palestinians, which is something that some in this administration have advocated for decades.
And that puts Israel in a very dangerous place.
And you can tell that there's an ulterior motive because the statistics are absurd. The statistics are we need to get this aid, this supply of food into Gaza. But the statistics that came out today is currently 80% more food is going into Gaza, 80% more than was going into Gaza before the war began. So Gaza's literally flooded with food and humanitarian supplies. That the fact that Hamas absconds with it all, holds it hostage, destroys some, and then resells the rest, so pirates it, and then profits from it.
And even kills their own citizens as they struggle to get access.
Last night, they killed maybe 40, 50 citizens who tried desperately to get at that food, and they shot them. But what this shows is there's some ulterior motive here.
We're out of time, David. We have to come back to you very soon to find out what that ulterior motive is. Thank you for eliminating all of this. We'll be visiting with you shortly. God bless you. We'll be right back with more. Stay tuned, folks. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. This week, the House and Senate are supposed to fund the last few government agencies still awaiting appropriations for a fiscal year that is now half over. If recent practice is any guide, at the Senate's insistence, the House will concede key priorities. Take funding for foreign operations. The Senate reportedly is insisting on rescinding a House measure to defund the World Health Organization. Underwriting the WHO will support Team Biden's impending stealthy efforts to surrender American sovereignty to that organization's unaccountable and malfeasant Marxist director general. As we saw in the COVID pandemic, when the WHO could only give us advice, your medical freedom can be snuffed by Dr. Tedros Ghebreyesus. That will surely happen if he is granted the authority to dictate our public health policy. Join us in telling the House to hold the line on defunding the WHO at sovereigntycoalition.org. This is Frank Gaffney.
We're back, and I'm very pleased to be able to welcome a man we've become extraordinarily fond of, though unfortunately we've not talked to in altogether too long a time. So this is a happy occasion to visit with our friend Colonel Rob Manis. He is the host of the Rob Manis podcast and a distinguished veteran of the United States Air Force. He has been a member of our Committee on the Present Danger China, I think from its inception, and is active also in our Save America's Military Coalition, and we are deeply appreciative for all that he does, including notably as the president of the Mississippi chapter of a group called Veterans for America First. And the group has recently released an important new documentary film entitled Border Invasion. We wanted to catch up with Rob to take stock of that film and so much more that he and Veterans for America First have been doing. So, Rob, welcome back. It's good to have you with us.
Thank you, Frank. It's good to be here.
Tell us a little bit about the film. I think we're all on this program certainly fairly conversant with the problem, but heavens knows there's an urgent need for the broader population to know what you know about the provenance of this border invasion, how unnecessary it is, and how really unbelievably damaging have been its repercussions. Tell us about it.
National Veterans for America First organization, led by Stan Fitzgerald, created this documentary. They went down to the border, took a group of America First congressional candidates that they've endorsed from various states with them, former Border Patrol agent Victor Avila and former CBP chief Randy Clark was there, and they walked the ground, including going into Mexico. The documentary is just startling for those that aren't familiar with what's really happening with this border invasion that Joe Biden has implemented from his first day in office, when he eliminated all of the controls that the Trump administration had successfully used to prevent things like human trafficking and child trafficking and those kind of things. So they took these folks down there and actually looked at things like the rape trees that you've heard Senator Ted Cruz talk about and show videos of, and seeing young families with two-year-olds crossing the Rio Grande River, even though they could see the razor wire on the American side there at the Eagle Pass area, and weren't going to be able to get across it. They still crossed the river, risking their children's lives. And it's because they've been incentivized by the Biden administration's policies. And so have the drug cartels that continue to kill hundreds of thousands of Americans and traffic children and women in sex trafficking rings to within the United States. And it's just very compelling to actually see the ground, talk to the law enforcement folks that are responsible for implementing both the Trump policies, and then we're also involved in when the change happened, to talk about the weaknesses and really the incentivization of the Biden policies that has resulted in, I think, almost over 10 million people have come here illegally. That includes 2 million gotaways, over 100,000 that we know of, Chinese military age males, military age males in the tens of thousands from countries that that we know grow Islamist terrorists, you know, almost 200 on the terror watch list. So it's a very compelling documentary.
No, this sounds tremendously important, Rob. Let me ask you about particularly that point you just made. Does the film get into this question of who are these unaccompanied fighting age males, whether they're coming from China or from these various, I call them Sharia supremacist nations?
Yes, it does. As a matter of fact, one of the individuals in the film itself is an Iranian woman that has come to the United States, but grew up in Iran under the mullah's dictatorship and theocracy there. And she talks about how the incentivized nature of these policies is bringing people from those countries that intend to do harm to Americans and to the American way of life. And it's very specific, especially from that country and other countries in the Middle East, that we know they intend to do us harm. They've said it for decades now, death to America, the great Satan. And it was a very compelling story.
Let me ask you, Rod, you've got a background, of course, in national security, having served, rising through the ranks to colonel in the Air Force. And you've been responsible for bases and, you know, the security of operations as well as, you know, combat air activities and the like. What kind of harm could such people, particularly if, as I understand it, and I wonder whether this is a point made in the film, these Chinese unaccompanied fighting age males are actually People's Liberation Army Special Forces elements. What kind of harm could they reasonably be expected to do if turned loose in this country, as they have been by some estimates, the tens of thousands?
Well, Frank, as we all know, it's a free country still, where, and what I mean by that is you can still get firearms, ammunition, even some types of explosives relatively easily. Of course, there's a black market, which these folks, if they are part of a special forces operation, they're part of a wider network of Chinese network organizations that have been in the United States for decades now. They've infiltrated the university systems. They've infiltrated our scientific corporations. They've infiltrated even marijuana growing. We've seen lately as far as growing marijuana. So they have a network that they can fall back on and rely on. And what that means very simply is if they are assigned to go somewhere, they go, they make contact, they get equipped, they train on whatever targets they're looking for. And the target can be as simple as a substation up in the mountains as part of an EMP attack.
Hold this thought, because this is where we're going to come back to in a moment. We're very pleased to be joined by Colonel Rob Manis, United States Air Force retired, the host of The Rob Manis Show. Stay tuned for more. We're back. Colonel Rob Manis is in the house, I'm pleased to say. And I had to interrupt you, Rob, I apologize. You were talking about these Chinese possibly People's Liberation Army Special Forces elements having a network here in the United States that they could use, among other things, presumably to get arms. But what could they do? And you mentioned the possibility of EMP against substations. Talk a little bit about that and more broadly the problem of EMP, if you would. And then I want to ask you about another scenario.
Well, Frank, we've seen in recent years what I consider to have a likelihood of being test attacks. Now they're using Americans, but where substations have been attacked with things like long-range rifles. And the most recent was, I think, in North Carolina or South Carolina. They took a substation out and then put 45,000 people out of power in for a couple of weeks, I think, because of the damage that was done to the substation, using very simple tactics, techniques, and equipment to do that. And if you have 100,000 Chinese military-age males that are broken up into tens of thousands of small cells that are able to rely on the network that's already been built in the United States by the Chinese Communist Party that's infiltrated every part of our society and all of our institutions, then they have access to funding, equipment, logistics, resources, planning materials, target identification, and can spread out all over the country to not just do that as part of maybe an electromagnetic pulse attack, which is what the Chinese doctrine says they will do first in any attack on the United States. But, I mentioned the marijuana growing, and I forgot to mention before the break, the bio lab that was found. A bio attack by cells within the country is relatively simple to do, depending on the agent. You know, we've all read about the tests that we ourselves did using aerosol cans walking through airports that infected the entire nation within 72 hours, really. So when you have this number of people with access,
a benign,
an agent, but agent, you know, that could easily be replaced. So you don't even have to have a TV exciting type of attack. It could be very quiet and done very simply under the behind the scenes, and then all of a sudden something breaks out like that. And when you have this number of Chinese military age males that are possibly part of their special forces in the People's Liberation Army that have access to this network and all of these resources, that is not an unimaginable outcome. Yeah. For sure.
No, I'm really quite alarmed by that prospect. And you mentioned we did find one of these labs at Reed Lake, California. Yeah. And the House Select Committee on the Chinese Communist Party opined in an investigation they did that there's almost certainly going to be more of them elsewhere around the country. And to your point, Rob, it doesn't have to be all that imaginative a scenario. I mean, we had grandmothers coughing on us from Wuhan as one means of distributing a biological warfare attack by the Chinese Communist Party. But these guys with aerosol cans and training could represent a considerably more formidable means of exposing large numbers of us to possibly very, very deadly diseases. And Rob, the thing that's just mind-boggling to me is the indifference that the FBI and the Centers for Disease Control exhibited towards this Reedley lab, let alone finding out whether there are any more of them around. That doesn't seem to be getting much attention, and it's the kind of threat that I would like to think is top of mind. When we talked to our colleague Sam Faddis earlier in this program and with regularity on other occasions, he said, you know, he had the job of working the WMD, Weapons of Mass Destruction Terrorism Portfolio at the Central Intelligence Agency before he retired. He said this would be a four-alarm fire alarm going off for him if he were still in that job, but not so much under this administration. Are you surprised at that?
Unfortunately, I'm not surprised that this administration's priorities is not on actual threats to the United States internally. It's on this mythical white male supremacist army that doesn't exist, and MAGA grandmas and those kinds of things. And it just really is. It is frightening.
Look over there, folks. Said.
Yeah, it's frightening because that lab should have risen, as Sam said, to the absolute top priority, and not just that lab, but But all of these Chinese military age males in conjunction with that, that should be the top priority. And then right below that is these infiltrators through the southern border that are on the known terrorist watch list, and the ones that are not, that are in the like 30,000 Turks that have come through the southern border under Biden.
Among them.
Exactly right.
Hey, Rob, one last question before we let you go. The U.S. Military Academy at West Point released this week a statement announcing that it had changed the mission for cadets to excise the words duty, honor, country. What's up with that, Rob?
As part of a larger effort to indoctrinate all of our young officers and the service academies, as you know, Frank, are the premier officer graduation point and accession point for the U.S. Armed Forces, and West Point's being the oldest. And the motto of duty, honor, country has been there for decades and decades and decades, and it represents what a military officer in the United States is supposed to be focused on as they are looking to find and kill America's enemies at the behest of the Congress of the United States. But what that does, though, is it's a sign that the incorporation and indoctrination of diversity, equity, and inclusion is almost complete. And that is a very frightening prospect because, the United States Army, as the Continental Army, a very small percentage of Americans created this country. Without them, we would not have a country. And the United States Army is representative of the country, as are all the military services. We're all volunteer. But if we are not getting volunteers to enter that army that believe in America, that will keep to their oaths of office to the Constitution of the United States, and they won't focus on duty, honor, country, then we're in big trouble.
Big trouble indeed. We have to have you back to have a deeper drill down on all of this. I call it Marxism, not wokeism, in the military. It's a mortal threat, I believe, not only to our armed forces, but to our country as well. Rob Manis, thank you for the great work you do at the Rob Manis Show. Come back soon. I hope the rest of you will do the same again next time. Until then, it's Frank Gaffney. Go forth and multiply.